Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to I'm used to saying Tuesday night, but we are here on a Wednesday night. Yes, the show last night was moved from. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us. I am your host, John Robb, and we're going to have a great show for you tonight. We're going to have Marie Force on. She's going to be on here first, and hopefully we've had this happen before, so I just want to let everybody know. David Moody is everything worked out okay. If we don't, but I just want to let everybody know that that might happen. So, you know, what better way than to start a Wednesday evening here than with 60 minutes of Suspense Radio, and it begins. Again, welcome everybody. Wednesday night here. I'm so glad that everybody's here to join us. And, you know, it's amazing because we've been noticing that our radio downloads have been increasing by a lot here over the last couple months. And I want to thank everybody for that. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, it's because of my great voice and because of the great show. You know, why exactly, you know, is that? Is it the guests or whatnot? Well, I think it kind of hit me last night when I'm sitting there and I'm looking through and I'm like, there really is nothing on TV to watch. I mean, when you're looking at the shows that are out there to now, and I was so excited to see. They've been putting out in today's day and age, and I'm very, very disappointed. I must say that a lot of the shows, you know, that I was looking forward to have just not been, you know, very good. So I have to see exactly, you know, why, you know, those shows have been canceled. I used to watch The Chase, gone. I tried to watch The Event. That was a mistake anyway. I am into this one show, though, and it's called The Defenders with Jim Belushi and Jerry O'Connell. And, yes, Jerry O'Connell is the same little kid who played in Stand By Me. And, you know, he's now married to Rebecca Romaine Stamos. Very, very funny show. You know, it's very abstract legal, but it is funny to kind of see how those things go on. They're set in Vegas. Not a lot of, you know, there's some suspense and thing. It's a lot of comedy, but I just find it, you know, entertaining. And I think that that's what I'm looking for most is just entertaining because I'm, you know, tired of CSI. There's only so many things that they can do. I'm not a big NCIS fan. Again, I think it's boring. There's only so many things that they can do. So I think a lot of those shows have run their course, and I thought The Glade, I tried Boardwalk Empire on HBO, didn't find that one very good. Undercovers really bored me. It was Mr. and Mrs. Smith to the big screen. Didn't like the movie, didn't think I'd like the show. I am interested in Smallville. I know that's not really a big suspense, but, you know, I am interested in Smallville because it is the final season. Want to kind of see how they wrap that up. But, again, if you're not a sports nut, which is this is the greatest time of the year to be a sports fan because of football and basketball and, you know, hockey going on and baseball just ended, then it's great to know that, you know, Suspense Radio here to be able to help you out, you know, brought to you by Suspense Magazine, which is, you know, our monthly publication that you can always get, suspensemagazine.com. But, again, I really feel that, you know, we're talking that the TV shows are really down. So I think it's great to see that some of these, you know, authors are now getting their shows put, whether it's, you know, I think I'd rather see them as a TV series than to the big screen because, you know, I miss them. I see them for an hour and 45 minutes and it's gone. Whereas if they have great characters, you know, I can see them on TV and they come every week, you know, for an hour a week. I get to sit in there and relive them and get to be able to get myself entertained that way. So it kind of brings me, you know, around again. I always try to start off because it kind of brings me around again to the point was, you know, what anticipation or suspense are you guys looking for here in 2011? How do you think things are going to change the fact of 2011? What do you think is going to happen? I will say in our December issue that we have put out of our best books of 2010. I will not reveal anything until it's on the shelves, but we have sent out the notices to those certain people, and they're being quiet also on what's going on. But it's a great list. It took us a very, very long time to come up with this list. You know, thousands of books and you know, a lot of voting and a lot of, you know, yelling and screaming back and forth of this author, this book. We broke it down into many subgenres, and then we picked our one book of 2010 that we decided was number one regardless of subdrama or subgenre, which, you know, could have been police procedural, espionage, spy, romantic suspense, paranormal, dark urban fantasy, true crime. You know, any of those subgenres that we put out there, we get the best book of 2010, and we invite everybody to say that, you know, we hope you like it. So we want you to check it out, and we've been thinking about 2011, how the aspects are going to change, what great authors are going to be out there and things like that. But what we do know is that we have an author on the air tonight whose book, Fatal Justice, the second book here in the Fatal series that she has written, is her first book called Fatal Affair. And her book comes out, Fatal Justice, here January 2011. And then she just finished her next one, which she'll, you know, talk about also. She was a female, you know, romance writer, came over, and now she's more mystery suspense and still has that romantic twist into it. So I want to welcome Marie Force to the air. And Marie, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So again, Fatal Affair, available now. Fatal Justice comes out January 2011. Can you give people a little bit of background about the Fatal series and the jump from more of the straight romance and now into the mystery and suspense genre?
Sure. Well, I'm still writing straight contemporary romance, too, so I'm kind of doing both at the same time. I've got another book coming out in February called Everyone Loves a Hero. That's a straight contemporary. But the Fatal books, kind of, it's an interesting little journey that they have taken me on. The idea for the book came from a congressman being found dead in his apartment in Washington in 2007. I read this in the Washington Post online and was just flipping through the post like I do a lot of days and came across the story, and it just started my wheels turning. And it turned out that initially the congressman's death was investigated as a homicide because he was found at the bottom of his stairs. And later it was found that he had a heart attack and fell down the stairs. Very sad, very tragic. But that got my wheels turning. Well, what if it was a murder, and how would that be handled, and who would find him, and what capacity would his office deal with that? And next thing I know, I've got a chief of staff coming into an apartment at the Watergate and finding his boss, Senator John O'Connor, murdered, viciously murdered in his bed. And that sets off the series that became the Fatal series, which initially was just supposed to be a book, and now it's heading for four books. So,
hey, nothing wrong.
No, it's taken on a life of its own, and Nick Capuano is the hero of these books. He's the chief of staff who finds his boss murdered, and the detective who's assigned to the case is Nick's one-night stand from six years earlier, who he's never seen again until the day that they meet up again in John O'Connor's apartment. And their romance anchors this entire series. Each book, they are featured in each book. And I don't really feel like I'm giving anything away too huge by saying at the end of Fatal Affair, the Virginia Democrats ask Nick to finish the last year of John's term so he becomes a senator. And so it's the senator and the cop who, you know, you figure endless amounts of romantic and professional conflict that will cause living and working in that city where they become the it couple, the media's chasing them down the street and all the things that Sam so despises.
Yep.
So in another subplot to this is her father's unsolved shooting. He was shot on the job 2 years earlier. He's a quadriplegic. The case is unsolved, and it hovers over her life, the series, their romance, their relationship, her family, everything. That unsolved murder, that unsolved attempted murder is something that rankles her as a homicide detective and somebody who's pretty much known for closing just about every case she comes across, except for, to her, the most important one.
Now,
so there's a lot of...
And it's always true, you know, viciously murdered. Why does everyone always have to be viciously murdered, though? I mean,
this murder was pretty grisly.
Yeah, I mean, can't they just, like, kind of walk in and someone just, like, kind of strangle them real fast and then just kind of leave them nicely? Can't they be nicely murdered?
Well, no. Nicely murdered is, you know,
I guess that's, like, slightly dead.
Or kind of pregnant.
Right, kind of pregnant.
Yeah, no, this is a particularly disgusting, I have to say, yeah, the boys are going to want to, you know, look away at some parts of this.
Oh, the boys, not the girls, but the boys want to look
boys,
away.
The boys, yeah.
Wait a second.
It's kind of gross.
If you're saying that the boys want to look away, I don't think we all have to guess then on exactly what you mean by vicious murder down.
Let's just say that John's last moments were not good ones.
So was that kind of a subconscious kind of way to kill somebody then?
Well, it all makes sense in the end. When you read the whole book, it makes sense in the end. But I'll tell you, the fact that that is in the story and in the murder was unfolded the way that it did sent the detectives on a whole different sort of path than they might have been on otherwise. Because if you know that's a crime of passion, so you know you're looking at women and you're looking at you know who's he been with, and in John O'Connor's case, it was more a matter of who hasn't he been with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to me to write this character, the dead senator, as a full-on, fully formed character who is dead on page one, but he becomes such an important person in the book and becomes a fully formed character, but even though he's dead.
Right.
And he continues to populate the series in his own unique way and the legacy that he has passed on to Nick. And he's an important character in the whole series, so... But his murder is the catalyst that began, and it literally came from a newspaper article. So you never know where the ideas are going to come from.
And do you think that when you're, you know, you say that you were writing, you know, you're still writing straight romance, and now you're jumping in. Where do you say, you know, your passion lies? I mean, is it something where you're like, you're going to stick in the future and say, you know what, I think I'm really like in this mystery and suspense stuff, because you can go so many different directions and still bring your great romantic side into it, which
That's
is
exactly
what I think
why
is
I'm
good.
Loving this series so much, because I feel like my whole life has been leading up to writing the series, because I was a poli-sci major in college along with a journalism major, and I've always been fascinated with politics. I love everything to do. I work for a company in Washington, and I live in Rhode Island, but I'm in Washington all the time. I love everything about what goes on, like with all levels of politics, like watching the midterm elections. It was, like, exciting. You know, I love it. So for me to be able to do that, I'm also a rabid romance reader. I love to write romance. And then I love, like, all the grisly true crime stuff, too. So the combination of those three things was, like, the perfect fit for me to be able to bring in the politics. I'm trying to be careful with the politics because I know it can be very tedious. And often my references to Nick's job are not about the glamorous parts but about the tedious parts. You know, he'll refer to some committee meeting that took half his day, and so you know I'm trying to show that, like, you know, there's a lot of it that's not very sexy in his job.
Right.
So her job is much sexier on the page than his, but his is more, you know, it comes across as being very glamorous and elegant, but in reality it's really kind of boring, you know, in a lot
right.
of cases. So I'm trying to show that there's a, you know, the grinding wheel of how things work in politics is often not very interesting. So I'm not focusing as much on his job in the series as I am in hers, on hers, but more how the two jobs kind of butt heads against each other too, which has been very interesting.
And, you know, and here's something that I found interesting, and I, it took you, you say in your bio here on your website, that you sold Fatal Justice on the fifth anniversary, so the fifth year anniversary of the day that you wrote the end of the book.
Oh, no,
now,
the end of my very first book.
Right,
no,
oh, the end, so the end
very,
of your very,
my
first...
very first book, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it just kind of worked out that way. Well, it was an interesting thing because when I tried to sell Fatal Affair, to publishers, you know, in New York who publish romantic suspense, they wanted a new couple in the second book. That was a very important there's a formula to romance. I'm not going to say that there isn't. However, you know, we all like to shake up that formula, and we all like to do put our own spin on it. And, you know, none of us write to the formula. There's a couple of things that have to be in a romance. There has to be a happily ever after, for one thing. Or, in
mm-hmm.
the case of my books, a happy for now, an HFN instead of an HEA. So... you know, they all have to end on a happy note. Like, the reader expects that, and it's a kind of a promise that you make to them. So that is one thing with a romance. So the romance editors want a different couple. Like, for instance, Freddie Cruz is Sam's partner in Fatal Affair, and he's a very dynamic character, very funny, and he would make a great hero for the second book. But that's not how I saw it. I wanted to write about the cop and the senator who are trying to make it work in their city, you know, where their jobs are going to be buttoned up against each other, and, you know, her stuff, she always says, my crap's going to bounce off of your crap and cause you political trouble, and, you know, which it does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she gets a lot of attention because she's very high profile, and so is he. And
right.
So they become like a, there's a line in Fatal Justice where they quote a headline in the Washington Post that not since Jack and Jackie has Washington been so riveted by a political couple, which Sam, as a cop, hates that kind of attention, you know?
Right.
She hates it. But now she's finding herself having to do things for his career that normally she would choke on before she would, oh, you got to be kidding me, you know?
Right.
So that's the story I wanted to write. I wanted to write about an ongoing relationship that was going to be endlessly conflicted by the jobs, by the city, by the setting. And that's not the romance. I don't like the word formula, but it's not the way that the romance series usually unfold. They usually have a new couple in the second book, a character from the first book, then steps into the main role in the second book, and so on. That's not how I wanted to do it. So initially it didn't sell. And so when Harlequin's Carina Press opened their door, they say they want to do everything different. They want to shake things up. I thought, why not?
Yeah.
So two books that were collecting dust on my shelf a year ago are now published or about to be published. And then now there's two more coming too. And Sam and Nick's wedding is going to be featured in a novella called Fatal Destiny, which will come between Fatal Consequences, which is book three, and what I hope will be Fatal Flaw, which will be book four. So,
now, in today's day and age, because you look back, and even if you look, you know, no less than 15, maybe 16, 17, 18 years ago, is that you see a lot more women mystery suspense thriller writers today. But the thing that you find interesting is that most women who are writing mystery suspense thrillers, almost all of them had to start off writing romance in order to get published. And I don't know if that's because the publishers wanted to see if they get their feet wet. But the thing that I find is that they no longer have to wait the 20, 30 romance books in order to write kind of what they want to write. Now, do you feel that that stigmata of women that can't write mystery and thriller and suspense right out of the gate is now finally going away?
Yeah, I'm unaware of that stigmata.
Well,
I've never felt that. I've never experienced
that. The reason I say is because when I look back at some of the great authors, you know, like the Erica Spindlers and the Nora Roberts and all, the J.D. Rock, you know, those, they all started to write romance. And then they started in mystery and suspense.
I think often it's more a matter of wanting to shake things up a little bit. And I know that for me, I enjoy writing the suspense stuff, but the romance is always front and center. For instance, Fatal Justice opens with the romance. You know, instead of the mystery, it opens with the romance. So there's a lot of chapters at the beginning of Fatal Justice dealing with the transition of them deciding that they're going to make a go of this. And then the nuts and bolts of that, actually putting it into practice in the beginning of that book, which I don't want to always start with Sam standing over a dead body. That's just not that's not the series I want to write. And so the romance for me is always going to be pivotal. If you told me I couldn't have romance in those books, I wouldn't want to write them.
Okay.
So the suspense part is very important. And actually, I wrote all of Fatal Consequences thinking that my mystery portion wasn't as compelling as it was in Fatal Affair and Fatal Justice. And my beta readers are telling me it's the most compelling mystery yet. So, you know, so what do I know? But it's to me, the romance is really what makes it fun. And the suspense and the mystery and the murders and the mayhem is what makes it gritty. But for me, as the writer, I enjoy writing Sam and Nick a lot. And I love the parts that I get to write when it's just the two of them working out the boundaries of this incredibly high-profile relationship that neither one of them really signed, you know, it's not really what they would have chosen for themselves to be so high-profile. But yet, here we are, and now we have to deal with it. And I'm finding to be very interesting.
And now what I have here is, and we had a SmackDown, actually, and we used to have SmackDown on the show, and we kind of stopped doing that a little bit, but we had a SmackDown on the show that was actually, which is more important to write in a mystery suspense thriller series? Is it the romance or is it comedy? And romance actually won out. It was actually the show that we had on with Eric Jerome Dickey. And romance actually won out because romance in itself can be the underlining suspense or mystery compared to just the murder, because you just don't know, you know, is the girl going to get the guy going to get the girl? Is there something going on between them? Where comedy is basically just in your face trying to laugh out loud.
Right. And, you know, that's very true. And there are some laugh out loud moments in all of these books, because for one thing, Sam and her partner, Freddie Cruz, Freddie is a 29-year-old hardcore Christian who has, you know, very, 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 very firm beliefs about things, and he's constantly chiding her for her language and her, you know, her gritty attitude about things. He's always like, he's kind of like her father rather than her junior partner, and she's always like, oh, you know, like, cut it out, Fred, you know. So the conflict, the back and forth, the banter between them, the readers tell me, is funny, and it's fun to write because, you know, he drives her crazy, you know?
Right.
But she loves him so much. She loves him. But what you were saying about the romance and keeping the romance as a critical element to the suspense is a great, I don't want to say it's great because I wrote it, but there's a great moment in Fatal Justice where something happens where Nick believes very firmly that Sam has been shot. And he's the one who's fighting for the relationship, keeping her in it. And all of a sudden, and he throws his hands up and there's other things that happen that lead to this too. But, you know, he kind of takes a step back and he's like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can live like this. I don't know if I can live with every single time I hear that something's happened to a cop in the city, I'm going to think it's you. And
right.
I don't
a
know
lot
if
of
I
internal
can do that.
Conflict. A lot of internal conflict, which gives the reader a lot more of an emotional attachment to the character, which is extremely difficult to do instead of just writing a flat character that doesn't have that emotional connection, probably, to the reader.
Right, exactly. And making them, giving them compelling backstory. You know, Nick is the product of a teenage relationship where two 15-year-olds were his parents, and they foisted him off on a grandmother who didn't want him. And that's how he grew up. And he didn't really know what a true family was until John took him home, introduced him to his father, the senator. You know, and suddenly the O'Connor family becomes Nick's adopted family, and now game on. He's got a career that he never imagined and a family that has taken him under their wing. And, you know, so that's a very important dynamic in his life, too, is the whole growing up without and then being thrust into this amazing Kennedy-esque family, you know, that the whole country knows who they are. And, you know, so he's had a really interesting story, too. And then, of course, Sam with, you know, her father being a quadriplegic and all the issues that go along with that and trying to keep him actively. One of the things I love about these books is the way she keeps him engaged in her cases, because as he tells her, there's nothing wrong with my brain, you know. And he's often very critical to closing the cases, and going and bouncing it off of Dad is a big part of what she and Freddie are often taking a run by Dad's house, you know, to see what he has, his take on the thing is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really fun part of it, too, is even though her father is obviously gravely injured and living in a way that none of us would ever want to live, he's a very, very vital character in these books. So,
well,
so I'm having
a lot
of fun with it.
Oh, well, that's good. I got some fan questions here that I want to ask you that they sent in. So one of them is like, what does it feel to have a best-selling author like Christy Reese you are now the author to watch. How did that make you feel?
Yeah, that was really something. Christy and I have become friends through Facebook. I have to say, I love Facebook. I've met so many great people, and she is lovely, and her books are fabulous. If you haven't read them, I just actually downloaded the Kindle app onto my iTouch, and I'm zipping through some books right now, and hers are definitely on my list to catch up on some of the other ones that I haven't read. But her books are fantastic, and it was really very thrilling to get that quote from Christy. So she's been very generous.
And that's very interesting. Look at that. Another author reading books e-form, which I think is definitely going to take over. But you have it on the iTouch, which is a little small, though, right?
Well, you know what? I bought a Kindle, and it came yesterday, and it doesn't like my Wi-Fi network. So they sent me a new one today, and that one doesn't like my Wi-Fi network either.
You know what? I'm telling you right now, go get a Sony Reader, because that's what I had. I'm telling you about the Sony Reader, okay? I'm going to tell you. The Sony Reader, we looked at all of them. We had a Nook. We took it back. And the thing about the Kindle is, if the battery's dead, you have a nice paperweight. The other thing that the Sony Reader is that someone can send you a PDF of their books. You can download it. Boom, right there. Kindle can't do that. So I found that the Sony Reader is a little bit more like a mini computer, actually, to be able to have much more forms of things sent over there. And I found it was a lot better. So
I'm really all about the instant gratification part of it. I'm a little afraid of that, actually, with, you know, the one-touch purchase. That's going to be a little bit – because, like, books are my crack, you know?
I just did it the other day for the first time because we have so many books sent to us. I finally went out and I bought a book, and I decided because – one game to another game, and I wanted to see what it was like. And I said, well, what better way to try this out? And I'll tell you what, I wasn't plugged in the computer. I had it. I opened it, clicked it, boom, downloaded it right to it. And it was literally done in about 60 seconds.
It's a beautiful thing. I think there's going to be a 12-step program for e-reader people who are bankrupting their families with the one-stop purchase.
It is. EA, Electronics Anonymous or something.
Yeah, no kidding, because I can see how I'm going to have a lot of problems with this.
Yeah, but the good thing about those is like, you know, someone can go on and get your book, and it might only be like $2.99, and if they don't like it or they don't like the book that they purchased for $2.99, I don't think they feel as cheated as when they go to Barnes & Noble and they go to that front counter and think, you know, the big misnomer, of course, which I have to tell everybody again, people, when you walk into Barnes & Noble and you go to the main table and you see all those books, that's not the best books in the store. Those were paid to be put there. So don't just immediately take your $25 and pick one of those up. Go to the shelves and go read many other styles of books. You know, go find Marie's books. Go find Christie's books. Go find many other authors that are in the shelves.
Yeah, no, I have respect for anybody after what I went through getting published and, you know, two agents and this, that, and the other thing and all the ups and downs. I have respect for anyone, bestseller or not, who can get a book in one of those stores or on Amazon or whatever, because it's a huge big deal just to write the end. And every author out there has my respect for just persevering enough to write the end and then going through everything you have to go through to even get it into a store or onto Amazon or published in any way. It's really quite something. And then
spend $100,000 to have it in the front of the store.
That's another whole issue that we have no control over. You know, the authors have no control over that stuff. And we don't have control over our covers. We don't have control over a lot of things, you know. But I have to say the Fatal books have had awesome covers. Oh, my God, I love the covers. So
they are. They're very good. Yeah.
They're beautiful. Harlequin's doing a beautiful job branding that series, and I'm thrilled with them.
Yeah.
So.
And that's true. See, that's one thing that you just said that don't get. You had no control over where your book goes. You don't even have very much control over the cover. They can change the name of your book whenever they want,
to
change the name of your book. So, you know, again, people, you are basically, you know, you're writing and you're getting published and you're out there. That's when the stress really begins, I think, for an author.
Because now they're telling you to market. Yeah,
not telling you
people don't know that. Yeah. You know, that people don't realize that. They come back at us and say, blah, blah, blah about the cover, and it's like, okay, well, it's really not my call. You know, obviously, we get to say, you know, this doesn't work for me or that doesn't work, and hopefully sometimes they listen, sometimes, you know,
doesn't go your way.
I mean, it's not like you don't have any control over it, so you need to, like, you know, build a bridge, as my mother used to say, and get over it, you know, because the only control that we have over anything is writing the best possible book that we can, and a lot of it is out of our control after that. But I have to say that Corrine has been awesome and Harlequin about the books have the names that I gave them, And the series has the name I gave it, and the covers, I mean, just one look, and just they gave me everything I asked for, and then so much more, you know. So I'm really, really happy with the first two covers. I can't imagine, you know, them being any better than they are. So I'm thrilled with it.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well,
and so I want 6 books between, you know, 3 out and 3 coming, and I've only 2 of them have had the names changed. So, and I like the names that we came up with better than what I had initially. So,
I'll tell you what. You know, our next guest is not on here, so do you want to – I say we just keep rolling because I'm having a lot of fun here talking with you.
Sure.
If you would, though, if everybody would just give me, you know, maybe 45 seconds because I have to get something to drink because I think I've been talking more than I normally do. So just give me 45 seconds, and then we'll be right back on, all right?
Sounds good. I'll get some water, too.
Okay, we'll be back. So give everybody 45 seconds. We'll be right back on. We're going to continue here with Marie Force. Everybody, well, I'm just breaking out all the Halloween music tonight because I'm a little spooked out here. I just never really get used to this daylight savings times either. I don't know about you, Marie. It's great to have you back on. We are talking here again with Marie Force, author of the Fatal series, and her latest book, Fatal Affair, is out, and her newest one will be coming out, Fatal Justice, here in January 2011. So, Marie, I say we just keep going with this. But,
sure, no problem.
Yeah.
No, happy to be here. And I wanted to tell you the daylight savings time. I had dinner on the table at 5:40 today. And my kids were looking at me like, "What's wrong with you?" And I looked up at the time, and I was like, "What? It's like an hour earlier than we usually."
I think it gets to me because 5 o'clock it's dark.
Oh, it's crazy!
I mean,
it's 4:30 here.
Yeah,
behind the mountains. Yeah,
all the way over. So 5 o'clock it's dark, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, "It's 5 o'clock. It's dark, and this is going to go on." February.
My mother used to get very funky this time of year, and I can see why. It's the dark.
Yeah, it's the dark. The dark does this to you, without a doubt. I mean, the full moon is probably out, and then we start seeing the winter constellations coming, and then the chill is coming, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, I love fall. I love the winter of fall. Nothing's better, of course, than the fall in the Northeast where you live with the leaves and everything. I mean, which is a lot of great... you know, there's a lot of great authors up in the Northeast. I see so many of them now going and living in Maine, not just Stephen King, but, you know, John Connolly and Tess Gerritsen and Gare Lins. I mean, they're all – I don't know what it is about – they're all going there.
It's cold up there. Too cold for me.
It is very cold. But
very cold. Way different even than it is here. I mean, we're in Rhode Island, which is, you know, we're at the coast, too, down by Newport. So it's, you know, we're on the water, so we get a lot of the crazy stuff. But it's really cold in Maine. It's a lot longer of the year than it is here.
Maybe that's why they go to Maine, because they're locked in their house for the winter because they're afraid to go out, and all they can do is write.
Yeah, well, most writers are housebound freaks anyway, so I am.
That's true.
Oh, my God. Between my day job that I do at home. Give me hot pockets
and some Mountain Dew, and I'm going.
Yeah, between the day job that I do at home, from home, and then the writing job that I do, you know, from home, and my kids, and I mean, it's like there goes days this time of year. I'm like, when was the last time I left the house? I'm like a freakazoid.
Yeah, I tell you. didn't hear the show, she didn't realize that her PC had been fixed and that the sound was not reconfigured, but she wanted to say hi to you. She says you're the best. She loves your writing. It's a perfect balance of romance and suspense. And that came from Mary G., so hopefully she will listen to it later.
Oh, she's one of my favorite reader friends. She's so good to me.
Oh, you know
Mary
G.
Thank
you,
Mary G. Well, I know her just through my books, and she's lovely. Oh. So thank you, Mary G. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a great gal.
Too bad she couldn't hear. But like I said, you know, you can go back through and listen to the show because it's on iTunes, Zoom, Netflix,
right.
Blueberry, all these other places. So they have
I'll make sure to put that out to my people so they know.
Yeah, and
I know that there's probably a few listening. So,
yeah, I'm sure there are. I can't tell until everything's over with exactly like all the like who was all listening live and everything else. So I just keep talking and I really don't listen. But I do know that we get thousands of people that download after it's all done because then it goes and populates out there.
I just got an email from one of the listeners that they're enjoying listening to how I came up with the series. This is Heather.
Oh.
And my plans for it, and it makes her even more excited to continue reading. So I love that. Thank you, Heather.
Nice. And now how many emails do you think you get from fans probably on maybe a weekly basis?
Oh, well, you know, I'm really lucky to have this wonderful group that kind of hangs out with me on Facebook. So I get a lot of reader interaction. A lot of them have become friends. I got cinnamon buns today in the mail from my reader friend Allie, who baked for me this weekend because I let her read she's read Fatal Justice and Fatal Consequences.
Wow.
as my beta reader, and she was so excited that I asked her to beta read, for she sent me cinnamon buns. That's not good for the sedentary writer's waistline, but ooh, they were good.
They were good. Now,
so
were they frozen and they came to you frozen? Or?
No, you know what? She express mailed them. So it cost her like $11 to mail these. I mean, she's so awesome, you know. She read two of my books in a week for me because I really needed somebody to read the third one and tell me, you know, it was okay. So she read the second one because she hadn't read that one yet and the third one and, you know, just gave me the best feedback, and she's sending me a gift. I'm like, okay, wait, let's follow this picture.
What now? Did you send her an autographed copy?
Well, you know what? These are ebooks right now. They're Fatal Affair will be out in print in July, and so I definitely will be sending her a copy then. So
yeah,
I'm hoping the others will follow. I'm you know, I can only hope. So actually, Fatal Affair is going out in print in July to Harlequin's Romantic Suspense subscribers. So anybody who subscribes to Harlequin's Romantic Suspense program will get a copy of Fatal Affair in July. Really excited about that.
And it's only going to be in print to those people who are subscribers then right now?
Well, I'm still waiting to hear, but I'm hoping that Harlequin will also make it available through its eHarlequin community where people can, you know, go on their website and buy it directly too. I'm hoping, because I do have a lot of people I know who would love to buy it who are not necessarily subscribers. So we're still working out all the details. There were three Carina Press titles chosen for this direct-to-consumer program, and we're the first ones to do it.
Okay.
So we're not really sure yet of what all the details are going to be, but I'm just very excited that it's going to be in print. I can't wait to see it. So
and that's something that and that's interesting to know. I mean, that's something I didn't realize was that your book was only an ebook right now through Carina Press.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew all that going in, and that was
I did. And you know, it was really interesting to me because, like I said, you know, I tried to sell this the quote unquote what a year ago was quote unquote the conventional way, you know, and now anymore. I mean, ebooks are becoming so popular. I mean, the numbers that were out from September, something like 184% increase in ebook sales, you know, this year. It's really the iPad and all the other devices have brought it into mainstream. And, you know, what seemed kind of like an avant-garde decision for me a year ago now seems kind of mainstream. You know, it just doesn't really seem like that big of a deal that, okay, so far only an ebook, but I don't know. I'm really loving the experience. I'm loving the fact that readers are finding it in a number of different varieties. They're downloading it onto their computers. They're, you know, they're using their iTouch. They're reading it. So
great.
Judging by the mail that I get and the feedback on Facebook and Twitter and what people are reading it. So I'm really excited about that. So
well, Marie, I'll tell you, our next guest has finally showed up. And I want to thank you so much for sticking with us here for that extra 10 minutes and giving us just much more information about Fatal Affair, the Fatal series with Fatal Justice and then Fatal Consequences coming out. Hey, it's been a blast. I mean, again, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, John. It was great to talk to you.
Right. And, you know, keep in touch with us because we would like to, you know, bring you back on when Fatal Justice and then see how Fatal Fail does in print and things like that.
I would love to. Fatal Justice will be out in January 3rd, so my New Year's present.
All right. thank you so much.
Marie.
Have a good one.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that was Marie Force. You go to marieforce.com. You can find her ebooks and everything else. I want to go ahead right now and bring in our next guest, David Moody. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thank you, John. You well?
Hey, yes, and thank you so much for joining us from England. We really appreciate it, and we got everything worked out to be able to get you on.
Yeah, I'm really sorry it took so long. It's me and my lack of computer skills.
That's okay. But hey, the Autumn series here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, because you are what we consider right now like the zombie master.
Thank you. That's very good. And there's a lot of zombie masters around at the moment, so that's high praise. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Right now the zombie master. My reviewers cannot get enough of your book. So the Autumn series, it looks like right now the first Autumn book is now a free download that you have going on.
No, it originally was a free download. I had my first book published many, many years ago, about 1996, and it did nothing, really. It didn't sell in any great numbers. And I've written this second book, Autumn, and I wanted to get it to as many people as I could, but I didn't want to go on the same submission, rejection, merry-go-round that most authors have to go on. So what I did instead was gave it away as a free download from my website, and it was on there for about, I think, about 7 years, and it got something in the region of 500,000 downloads. And it eventually was picked up by Thomas Dunn Books after my Hater book was bought by them. Mm-hmm. So it's not a free download anymore, and it's taken a while to get out, but it's the first book in a series of five, has just been released in the last couple of weeks in the US and the UK, and the four more to come. So it's good. It's great to finally see it out through a major press and to see it in all the bookstores.
Now, and that's one thing that's kind of difficult for a lot of readers, because they kind of see a book that might only be available in the UK and now in the US. What's the latest book that readers in the US can pick up for that you've written?
The Autumn is the latest one that's been published. And as I say, that came out a couple of weeks ago in the US.
Okay.
But they can also get hold of Hater and Dogblood, which are two books that were released. Hater came out last year, and Dogblood came out earlier this year. That's a completely separate series. The Autumn books are going to be coming out in 3 months. Also, the next one's out in February, then April, then July. So by this time next year, there'll be a whole shelf full of books out.
A whole shelf full of books. That's what we like to see, isn't it?
That's what I like to see. I need the money.
Exactly. Now, here, I guess, you know, where does your love of zombies come from, and why did you decide to go that route?
I think, like many people, we can trace it back to George Romero. We, in the 1980s, when I was growing up here in the UK, we had this ridiculous government that banned pretty much every horror movie that they could. They called them video nasties, and you just couldn't get them for love nor money. You couldn't get hold of anything. But fortunately, I had a friend whose dad owned a comic shop, one of the few comic shops that we had here at that time. And his dad used to go across to the US several times a year and come back with loads of great things that we couldn't get our hands on. And one of the things that he got was a Laserdisc player and a copy of Night of the Living Dead. And just one afternoon after school, we sat there and we watched Night of the Living Dead with a huge thunderstorm raging outside. And then that was the moment everything changed for me. And that's when I knew that I wanted to write about zombies.
So that was it?
Yeah, that was it. It's just a fantastic film. And it's just, you know, it changed the way that horror movies were made. It changed the direction of the genre. And it's led to so much. You know, it's 30 years later, and now zombies have got a higher profile than ever, thanks to The Walking Dead and everything else that's going on at the moment.
Right, the new show The Walking Dead, which is now on TV.
That's right, yeah, which is going to be a huge success, and I'm really pleased about that, because that's a kind of it's the serious side of zombies. You know, if there is a serious side of zombies, that sounds like a strange thing to say.
Yeah, but I know. I think, serious side zombies.
You know what I mean? And most zombie stories are kind of slapstick, or they're just blood and guts. But there are a few zombie stories like Autumn and The Walking Dead, which try and put a more serious slant on it, to try and present them more as a real serious danger, and not just these flesh-eating ghouls. So, yeah, it's a good time to be a zombie writer at the moment.
Right. I think that stories like that are trying to bring the more of the human side, more of the emotional element, like writers have done now with vampires to try to do with zombies,
yes.
Which I think is a great thing, you know. Instead of turning them away from being monsters, but being that they are more even emotional, you know, emotional people, even though, you know, they're dead and they're zombies, but so are vampires. They're dead.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I think it's one of the most interesting facets of zombies, the fact that they are us and we are them, you know, and all it takes is, in some stories, one bite, one scratch, and you become them. And if they beat you, you're going to become one of them. And it's just a terrifying prospect, isn't it, that you're going to become your enemy once you're dead. It's just it's horrendous. And it's just a theme that resonates constantly. But, you know, you can draw parallels with every social situation that you've got. It's just the ultimate movie monster, as far as I'm concerned, is a zombie.
And you now... you now have your book finally going to, you know, the big screen. You finally got the Witch One that just got sold here in order to become a movie. Was that something that you wanted, that you were hoping to have happen when you started to write these books?
Yeah. The reason that I got into writing was that I had these stories and I always wanted to film them. I wanted to be a filmmaker. But when I left school, I'd got absolutely no experience at all. I'd got no understanding of how the film industry worked. You know, I could just about tell which end of the camera to point and which end to look through, but that was about all. So I really hadn't got any grounds to get into filmmaking. So instead, I knew I could write, so I ended up writing novels of the stories that I wanted to film. So it was always a plan, and I think I write in a very visual way. You know, before I start actually writing a book, I like to be able to sit down and just shut my eyes and watch the whole thing almost as a film, if I could. So it was something that I always wanted to do. But actually, the rights to two of my books have been sold, and one of them, The Autumn, has already been made. It was made by a small independent company in Canada. So it's a very low-budget thing, but it had Dexter Fletcher in it and David Carradine. And it upset a lot of zombie purists because there's not a huge amount of flesh-eating or blood and guts. But you know, I think the people that have enjoyed the books have enjoyed the film. The other film deal I've got is Guillermo del Toro, who now owns the rights to my book Hater, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah,
you know, it still freaks me out when I say that. I can't believe that guy actually touched one of my books, never mind read it or bought the rights for it.
Wow.
And I don't know what's happening with that at the moment. You know, hopefully we'll have some news soon, but he's just about the busiest man in Hollywood, I think. So, no, I'll be patient.
Yeah, I mean... It's something that you get shell-shocked by, don't you? You just get shell-shocked.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's almost 4 years, I think, since I had my first contact with him and his people, and I still can't believe it today. You know, standing here talking to you and saying that name, Guillermo del Toro, you know, the guy's an absolute genius. I've been following his work for years, and as I say, to have him even looking at my book is honor enough for me.
Well, I want to tell everybody here, your website is DJ Moody, MOODY.co.uk. And that's where they can find out a lot of information, especially here about, you know, your Hater series that's coming up and everything else. And so now do you sell, and I see that you sell, you know, signed books from infectedbooks.co.uk also. So I want to let everybody know that they can do that. Do you get a lot of mail still? A lot of people mail and ask you, you know, a lot of weird things. I mean, seeing as how you're a zombie writer, do you get a lot of strange and unusual mail?
Yeah, I do get people who want to discuss like how zombies work and what they do and why they do this and why they do that. And I do find myself having these really strange and involved conversations about dead bodies all the time, which isn't normal.
And no, it's
my
not.
My wife's not too sure what she thinks about it, but... It earns a living, so I've got to do it. But no, it's great. It's absolutely brilliant to be able to talk about that for a living. You know, it's bizarre. But just absolutely fantastic. It sounds horrible. I never get tired of the dead. It's an endless source of inspiration for books. And the first page of Autumn, I kill absolutely everybody, and 99% of the world's population is dead. And once you've killed the whole world, Well, you can just go anywhere with that for the few survivors that are left. I could keep churning out these books for years, I think.
Now, for people that might not know about your Autumn series, and which one would you go ahead and say, you know what, should they start at the beginning, or can they go ahead and kind of start anywhere they need to kind of understand about it?
Really, the best place to start is the beginning. You can also start with the second book, because that kind of goes back to square one again. But what I'm also doing over the next couple of months on my website is there's going to be a lot of free fiction available. While I was writing the Autumn series originally, I also wrote a huge number of short stories and little character sketches about all the people, all the incidental characters that come in and out of the books. And all of that is going to be going online for free. So there'll be about 120,000, 150,000 words worth of free zombie fiction, which will really get you in the mood. And the individual character stories that go online will explain the premise and what happens and how the zombies change as you go through the books, and really give you an overall picture. But the best place to start is always at the beginning, so just pick up Autumn.
Okay, so the one thing is that which one of your Autumn series books do you feel was the most difficult for you to write? Now, whether that means emotionally difficult to get through, or story-wise just difficult to get through, which one gave you the most problems?
Most problems? That's an interesting question.
Hey, they can't all be softballs, David.
Sorry?
I said they can't all be softballs. I got to give you a couple curveballs now and then.
Of course you have, yeah. Hey, you and your baseball references. I don't get them over here. We don't play baseball.
That's true. I forgot. You don't play. Okay, they can't all be soccer balls. Or.
Fair enough then. No, I think that there's a fourth book that hasn't been released yet that I didn't release myself. I originally released the books myself through Infected Books. I set up a little label to produce paperbacks, but before I got to release the fourth book in a series, Autumn Disintegration, I signed a deal with Thomas Dunn Books, so it hasn't seen the light of day yet. But that was a really difficult book to write, because it deals with a completely new set of people who are 30 days into the disaster, so they've been living with the dead for 30 days, and it was really hard. It was like I based a lot of those people on the people that I knew. So from an emotional point of view, it was very strange trying to picture them after the apocalypse, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I guess the first thing that kind of got me into zombies more along the lines with the movie that actually originated over in England, I think, which was 28 Days Later.
Yeah. Well, that's been responsible for a lot of interest in zombies over here. Although people will argue until they're blue in the face that they're not technically zombies because they're not dead. But the principle's the same. They still want to bite
right.
you, and they still want to kill you, and they're still running around after you. But that was just a brilliant film. And it's strange. While I was waiting to speak to you, I was actually watching 28 Weeks Later on TV, the sequel. And they're just great. They've got a lovely atmosphere, and it's great to see the streets of London, which are normally so packed and busy, completely empty and desolate, apart from the odd wandering infected person. It's great.
Yeah.
I think Danny Boyle, he just put a whole new energy and a whole new dynamism into the zombies, because they could run and they could plausibly run.
Right. They were almost more superhuman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just being walking around like Nigh the Living Dead, just going brains, brains. They were a lot more of the superhuman part.
Yeah. Now, I have to say that the zombies in Autumn are more traditional Romero zombies. So they are shuffling, shambling creatures that just stagger around. But, yeah, the creatures in Danny Boyle's films and in the Dawn of the Dead remake, which also ran, it elevates them, doesn't it? It gives them a whole new level of menace, I think.
Right. And then I think the movie I Am Legend by Will Smith, I mean, did you see that one when that came out? Or the original, one of the two, because that made them more of a superhuman. But that showed also the intelligent side of zombies, on the fact of, because they set up a trap to capture him instead of just being mindless, you know, walking around not really doing anything. That was more of a very much of an intelligent side of them.
That's absolutely right. I Am Legend is a landmark book. I think that George Romero got a lot of inspiration for Night of the Living Dead from I Am Legend. And if you read the original Richard Matheson book, and then go back and watch the very first screen adaptation, which was called Last Man on Earth, starring Vincent Price. I think that they're far superior to Will Smith's version of the story, because it's never clear whether they're zombies or vampires in I Am Legend, but they retain something of what they used to be. So it's really chilling scenes where this guy, Neville, is trapped in his house, and the people, the creatures that are outside trying to get to him are the people that he used to know, and his best friend is there shouting out his name day after day. And it's, yeah, I would recommend for anybody who hasn't seen it, dig out the original. It's a far better film, I think, than either I Am Legend or The Omega Man, which was the Charlton Heston version made in the 70s.
And I want to kind of go back, because you mentioned something I think that was very interesting that I don't think a lot of authors do, is you visualize your book before, you know, you're kind of visualizing how it's going to look when you write it. Do you, and that formula must, you know, it really works for you. And I think that that's, you know, how you started out, you know, with everything, or did it just kind of fall into that?
No, it really was how I started out, because, as I said, it's the direction that I wanted to take was to go into films, was into the visualizing these stories. So it was just natural for me to think of them in those terms. And that's something I'd still like to do. So it still follows that I do actually sit there and I can just shut my eyes and watch the story unfold. And you, by doing it that way, you get a real good appreciation of how the characters look and talk and how they should react with each other, what the landscapes are like. And I just find that the only way that I can write. I couldn't write about the things that I do without knowing those kind of details.
Mm.
So I don't think that I'm particularly unusual. I think that a lot of authors probably do the same, but maybe I take it to an extreme, because I do like to be able to just sit back and really have the whole story ready before I even start writing.
You know, and I think that's the one thing of why, you know, reviewers read your books, is I think that they fall into it with you to be able to have that same visualization that you have when you were writing, that you brought that so clear to light that they can actually see it in their head too, and hopefully give them nightmares, because I think that's what it's all about when you're writing a book like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important not to give too much detail as well, because although my books are very visual, there's not a lot of precise detail. I won't tell you what colour somebody's hair is or what colour the coat they're wearing is, because I think it's also important for you to fill in the blanks when you're reading it. That makes it easier, I think, for the reader to identify with the story.
Right.
And then to put their own mark on it.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely something that you know, they need to be able to do too. I don't think it's that enjoyable if the author gives you everything, because then you're not using your imagination to try to put yourself in the story with the author and try to see how they were actually feeling too.
Yeah, that's right. It's like you're being recited to, isn't it, then? If they're giving you every detail. I like to leave, give enough guidance, but at the same time leave enough to the imagination.
Absolutely.
The whole horror movie thing, isn't it, that it's more frightening what you don't show.
Yeah.
You know, what the shadows in the corner and the things hiding behind the door, it's far more frightening, I think, just to allude to things rather than give every detail and show exactly how many teeth the monster's got and what colour the blood is, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, David, we have run out of time, but we definitely would like to bring you back on. Hopefully we can change the time a little bit here so, you know, it's not, I don't think, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning over there in England, but we thank you so much for joining us.
That's okay, and I'm sorry I was late.
That's okay.
I know how to do it now. So if you do have me back on, I'll be there prompt.
Oh, absolutely,
I'll be
we
there
will.
Straight away.
Absolutely. No, so again, cool. Thank you so much, David. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
That's no problem at all. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye bye.
Okay. Cheers. Bye bye.
Bye bye. So again, that was David Moody, all the way from England, calling us here on Skype. And I want to remind everybody to go to djmoody.co.uk to go find out. On Friday night, hear a lot more about Suspense Radio, and hopefully the zombies will keep you up. We want to thank Marie Force for coming with us tonight. That's suspense.com. So both are great guests tonight here. David Moody, Marie Force. Again, we'll see everyone on Friday night. Thank you so much for joining us.